Research has shown that humans are becoming less able to demonstrate empathy, and this is a problem for small business owners trying to use empathetic marketing, because if not done right, you can create insincere marketing, which is probably the worst type.
Yeah, but how do you create successful empathetic marketing? I think that's the question, right?
Three ways.
Welcome to the Dan Bradbury Podcast, the show where we focus each week on one of the six critical areas of business that if you haven't mastered, the company's going to suffer. So each week we provide at least one powerful strategy or action that you can take each week in that context to help you excel and scale your business. Dan, welcome to your own program. And what is the topic we have this week? What are we talking about?
Well, before we get into the topic, I just want to draw everybody's attention to your shocking decor. And I was going to make a joke and say, what's wrong with you, Tova? Are you homeless? But that is quite literally true as we record this podcast.
Indeed, yes. I'm coming to you from the lobby of a Marriott hotel, sponsored to you, by the way, by Starbucks. Coffee for people who have forgotten what coffee is supposed to do. Honest to God, there's no caffeine in this. Interestingly enough, I actually read an article the other day that talked, there was a study done in the UK, you'll enjoy this, not that you drink coffee, but on which coffee shops have the most caffeine. And Starbucks came in dead last. Like their coffee, I think their espresso has like 60 milligrams of coffee, whereas I think it was Costa Coffee. Yeah, a medium cappuccino has 325 milligrams of caffeine.
And shit.
Yeah, and like the maximum daily recommended allowance is 400. So you're almost peaking right at one coffee. It's crazy. I think Pret a Manger had, is that how you say it, Pret a Manger?
I say Pret a Manger, but I don't know if I'm correct. So
you're probably more correct than I am, but they have a...
That's generally, by the way, for the listeners, that's generally true for anything Topher and I discuss.
This is a sad but true admission. Yes, you are right. They have 180 milligrams of caffeine per shot of espresso. So there you go. Anyway, Starbucks, step it up again. Anyway, I am homeless because of the hurricane that just went through Tampa, Florida. So we were evacuated, but I'm ready to head back anyway. To be fair, I'm not pulling the sympathy card here. I was going out of town anyway, so it's not like it was a big deal. I just had to fly out early and take a $200 Uber to Orlando to get out.
Nice. Well, in that case, should have whined about it. And if only somebody had been telling you to move to Oxford, England, where there are zero hurricanes. Oh, here.
Yes, let's put that in the goal sheet for 2024. All right, what is the topic?
So the topic this week is marketing. I mean, especially Topher, in the current climate, right? It feels to me that people are feeling the pinch. You know, it's interesting. Across our wider Mastermind community, you see every different business type. You've got B2B, B2C, of different sizes, scales, international, local, you know, etc. And it 6 months ago, it was a mixed bag. Some people were going, no, business is great, never been better. Some people were going, oh, it's a bit tough, and lots of people in between. Whereas now, generally, the trend is, oh, it's tougher. It's definitely notably tougher. So whilst technically, economically, we may not be in recession, it would appear that it's now starting to feed its way, the inflation's feeding its way through the system, and people are getting a little bit slower, like longer transaction time to purchase, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So in that climate, in that context, it's like your marketing's got to be spot on.
Yeah, indeed. And there was an interesting article that you had shared with me from Harvard Business Review about how empathetic marketing is having a new level of challenge that we've never had simply because of people's like inability to be empathetic.
Right. I mean, let's take it at the high level first. I mean, if you would have to be living under a rock if you haven't seen some of the big companies that have been ousted, right? Like the most obvious extreme example would be Budweiser and the situation with transactivist Dylan Mulvaney. And that takes an extraordinary level of skill to screw it up that badly. I mean, I mean, just think about this. This is not a small company, and how they lose billions in valuation instantaneously, you have got to, especially when you're selling a commodity such as beer, right? By the way, yes. Side note, I do find it fascinating because so many, I forget the conglomerate's name, but so many of the beer brands are owned by the same conglomerates. People are like, oh, we're shunning Budweiser, we're going over to Miller Lite. It's the same bloody company. But the point being, you know, I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on, you know, you're going to antagonize. If you talk anything political, you're going to antagonize half of your client base, especially in a commoditized product such as beer. And really, Tover, at the root, we talk about empathetic marketing. How do you connect with your customers, right? And while there's some research to suggest that people are less good, there's research that says humans are less able to demonstrate empathy in kind of more divisive world. Really, the question you want to ask yourself is, did those values exist before you wanted to run the ad, or are you just jumping on the bandwagon?
Did those values in your company, or use the leader of that company?
Correct.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes, correct. So, you know, I forget the gentleman's name. We've spoken about him before on the podcast, the gentleman, the founder of Patagonia. It's like climate change, the world. There's something that he was clearly passionate about and very aligned for. So that,
yes.
So for them to further emphasize that and jump on that narrative as part of their message for the world and sustainability, etc. Great. Total alignment. And then they're aligning with the culture going, yes, the planet's in peril. And there's increasing awareness among society of going, you know what, we need to do something about this. Total alignment, aligned with that brand. Yeah, great. We want to buy from companies that represent or reflect our values. Great. And it's funny, Toby, how immediately you get nervous. I find myself nervous saying this statement because I might be missing some fact. But when I see it, I cannot see for the life of me any connection between Budweiser and any kind of trans rights, trans activism, etc. Yeah. Now, and just be clear to avoid the haters, it's like, okay, I'm definitely of the opinion trans rights are human rights, etc., for equality. And I kind of go, what's that got to do with beer?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, we can say that without, I hope, being painted with the brush that we're anti-trans. It has nothing to do with beer. Yeah. Now, by the way, we should say this. It has nothing to do with the target audience of people who drink Budweiser. Maybe we should phrase it that way. That's probably a more accurate way of seeing it.
Yeah, and I can already hear people wanting to counter-argue, and I go, look, but this is the point. The point is that the market perceived, because, I mean, we don't actually know with certainty what the intention was of that senior team that were making those decisions. And it's fair to say that the market perceived that this is, that they were playing a game. It was insincere. It was almost like, oh yeah, you know, it's a bit like different context, greenwashing. When people are like, oh yeah, we're environmentally friendly, but they're just trying to masquerade as that because they want to get the marketing and sales bump that comes with going, oh yeah, we're a green company, etc. And customers today are like, trust levels are low, Topher. I mean, it's spectacular. God only knows what it's going to be like in the next 12 months when you've got, US presidential elections, you've got not far away from a general election in the UK. It's going to be absolute carnage because nobody believes anything that anybody says. Everybody's like skepticism. So the point being, if you are slightly off base, if it's not a core of who you are, who the company is, what it represents, people are just going to call you out and call bullshit. And it will be give the exact opposite effect, right? It's not empathetic. In fact, it will alienate everybody.
Yeah, it'll be insincere marketing. And that, you know, the thing is, I mean, the very definition of empathetic marketing, right, is to put yourself in the shoes of your customers, their wants, their needs, their desires, right? And then promote that message with your product to solve that. And I think if they would have done that at Budweiser, they would have realized, wait, but this isn't a problem in the hearts and the minds of our ideal target market. So let's do this. Let's break this down into a step-by-step process. What could we do? What are some steps that we could do to make sure that we're not overstepping, getting into insincere marketing, but staying with it and using empathetic marketing in the way that it should be done.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is straight from the Harvard Business Review article, which we'll put a link to. So three steps. Number one, keep one ear to the ground, right? So ultimately, you need to be dialed in with what people, your customers, to be specific, what your customers or potential customers' preferences are, what's going on for them. So like being dialed in with where they're at, what's going on, what's important to them, right? Because it's harder and harder to get attention. So if you want to get their attention, you need to be really acutely dialed into what's important to them. And in my opinion, especially in the context of the arena in which you're playing, whenever your products or services, right? Okay, so that's number one. Keep your ear to the ground. Number two is give the customers the power of choice. Okay, so in other words, I think people are getting more resistant to authority. So the way that shows up for me, Topher, is people are feeling like they're being forced or coerced. A more elegant way of saying it is people love to buy. They don't like to be sold to. So, you know, give them the chance to opt out of marketing. I don't mean in the generic sense, oh, every email have an opt out. You know, if there's particular campaigns, people want to have that autonomy, flexibility. So give them the chance to, if they don't want to hear more about XYZ campaign, great, give them a chance to opt out about that. Otherwise, every time you message them, you're actually antagonizing them. Antagonizing them further, right?
Yep.
That's step number two, give them more choice. And number three is set the tone with visuals. Set the tone with visuals. And, you know, I am, funnily enough, Topher, this is from a while ago, but I saw this, was reminded of this again this morning, of a huge screw up the UK government did on this message. And it was, you know, obviously UK government is trying to appeal to everybody, all things, and it was promoting retraining, right? But people doing retraining. And it had a photograph of a, if I'm not mistaken, black lady who was in a ballet outfit. She was tying up ballet shoes. And the caption said, Fatima's next job might be in cyber. Right? That was the headline. Fatima's next job. So I think what they were trying to get to, Topher, was the kind of, hey, you know, it doesn't matter what your background is, you know, what ethnicity you are, what sex you are, you know, you can train in any industry. I think that was the kind of thing. It's like, we're trying to market. But you should see the hate. And I just saw it because it's doing the rounds again or whatever. And people were literally saying, F you, you know, Rishi Sunak and F you, you know, Boris Johnson, like, not all that, like just naming political figures that, you know, i.e. the government, who had put this highly offensive message. And it seemed to me, from glancing down that thread, all the hate messages I saw were from women that I could tell from like just having a look. But like they were all the replies. No one's going, yeah, well, interesting. Maybe I could retrain, or maybe I should retrain, or maybe I could go into this sector or that sector. It was all just, oh my God, I'm so offended because you're trying to, you know, mansplaining or patronizing is what I perceive then.
I think it could go up multiple ways. By the way, you know what this does, Dan? This reminds me, this would be a great action of the week, by the way, would be to have people that are listening to this now or watching this go back to episode 219, which was our last marketing topic, where we were talking about socially conscious messages, which is very kind of similar to the empathetic side of things. And you had three really powerful strategies for how to make sure that your social message in marketing isn't considered to be greenwashing or manipulative as well. And compare that to these three steps, because I think if they would have done that, they would have realized that you put a black woman in a ballet and then say that her next job might be cybersecurity, it could so easily be misinterpreted. So easily be misinterpreted that black women shouldn't be in ballet.
Right.
Women,
right.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it's crazy. And I think if they would realize that, because you run two risks, I think, with empathetic marketing. One is what we're talking about now, which is the fact that it could be completely offensive to your target market, even if you've got the message right. But then the second one, going harkening back to our marketing episode, maybe 8-9 weeks ago, on people misinterpreting the message as well. You want to make sure.
Well, I actually think the first thing, Topher, the message. The first thing from that episode was the most important bit, which is like, does it add value? It's like, if you cut away all the crap, it's like, does the message add value? And in the example about government, the government ad, I kind of go, the potential value of telling people the importance of retraining, etc., was completely lost because it became about something else. It wasn't the main thrust, like encouraging people to upskill, uptrain, which I think is, well, is clearly important in any market, but especially if we're coming into tighter times. It's like upskilling yourself and being more productive, being more useful can only be a good thing, right? But actually, no, it became about the primary thing was about this equality, diversity message. Not saying that's not important, but like that, make the bloody ad useful. So if you're listening to this right now, go, oh, it's not about government, it's not about whatever. It's like, okay, how do you be useful? How do you make your marketing educational, informative, so that the reader, the consumer, goes, oh yeah, I get that. That makes sense. I should get my carpets clean because, you know, all these bugs are living in them, or, you know, whatever the products or services that you are selling is, so that it's educating them and it's informative and ideally being entertaining. So, you know, number one, is it useful? Then it was about if it could be misconstrued. And the second one is like, is it pervasive? Like, is it long lasting? Right. And I think people lose track of that. So I'm all for being empathetic marketing, aligning with the audience, the power of the customer avatar, understanding where they're at. But for crying out loud, don't be a condescending little shit when you do it.
I agree. All right, my friend, let's move on to the book of the week. You're going to love this one. It's a close friend of both you and I.
Yeah, book of the week this week is Oversubscribed by our good friend Daniel Priestley. I mean, obviously, Daniel's written many fantastic books, and I can't remember which number book this was, number three, I think. But
I think it was three,
For my mind, and Daniel would probably disagree with this, it's my favorite. I mean, I've got my physical copy here, but, you know, Oversubscribed, how to get people lining up to do business with you, right? And it's just got so many good examples, and it's got a good template of the fundamental, Topher, which is supply and demand dictate price. And most people try and sell stuff when they haven't got the demand in the first place. And then it feels painful, right? How can you create the demand and or maybe, depending on your business context, restrict supply? Or you probably, if you're a service-based business, you probably do naturally have a restriction of supply, but create that imbalance so that people want what you've got. Right, in any industry, Topher, it's the top, you know, the top of the pyramid that makes all the profits, disproportionate amount of the profits, and everyone else is fighting for scraps. And what this book, I think, articulates really well is it gives a paradigm shift, a fundamental, to be fair, Robert Cialdini would argue, he spoke about scarcity in the book Influence, which would have 30 years ago now. But this book expands upon it. It's not the same. It's similar, but it's not the same. And it's expanded and gives loads of real-life examples, both big and small. Big businesses like Apple and the iPhone and the launch events and all that kind of stuff, but also small businesses. So you can practically use it in your business today. And I think it's especially critical, Topher, when if the marketplace gets a little tighter, gets a little bit more competitive.
Yeah, you know, I think one of Dan's gifts, Dan Priestley's gifts, not to say that you don't have this gift, I think you do as well, but we're talking about Dan Priestley right now. I think he has an amazing gift in his ability to look at examples of large corporations and translate that down into how it applies to small business. I think that's the benefit.
He does it great. In fact, funnily enough, I was in a shareholder investor meeting with Dan Priestley earlier this week. And
you're partnered with him.
Yeah, and Score App, which we've spoken about here on this podcast as well. And that company is doing great. And I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say or not say, but let's just say he came with that idea during the start of the pandemic, so 2020, and said, hey, I'm doing this thing, blah, 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 blah. Do you want to be an investor? And it took me all of 6 seconds to decide. Because actually, you just kind of go, well, power of mastermind, right? It's like, get around good people, good things happen. And I just went almost, I don't need to know any details. I don't need to see the deck. I'm like, Dan, are you in it? Yep. how much money are you putting in it? And he said X. And I went, yeah, great, I'm in. So am I on the same terms as you, like founder investor or first round of investment? Yep, great, I'm in. And let's just say the increase in valuation of that company is...
You've done very well.
Is absolutely spectacular. So yeah, good entrepreneurs.
Indeed. Speaking of what you just said, the power of a mastermind, let's not hesitate to promote the power of your mastermind, which is coming up September 18th and 19th at work. It's a great opportunity for fast growth business owners to get together, to share their ideas, share their challenges, come up with collective solutions. It's going to be September 18th and 19th at work conferences, and it is set to be an amazing program. You're going to be talking specifically about how you can look at your role as a CEO and identify all of the things that you need to have done, and then develop specific strategy on how to fire yourself from the most useless or cost ineffective things that you do, how to fire yourself from those jobs within 90 days so you can focus on the things that truly affect you in scaling and growing your company. So September 18th and 19th in Warwick Conferences, it's going to be a great opportunity to sit down with about 40, 50 other CEOs from small businesses around the UK that are doing big things. I'll be there, you'll be there, and if you're listening, you should be there as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll put a link in the show notes over, but ultimately, you know, your business isn't going to 10x by grinding out harder. Right? It's critical to get other insight, to get that kind of super jump. And so, you know, the investment where I said I'll be a bit opaque, I don't mind saying it's more than 10x up. Right? It's more than 10x up. And that's what happens when you get people operating on smart entrepreneurs operate with smart entrepreneurial principles. You can get this kind of compounded growth. If you want that kind of compounded growth in your business, I think you need to get yourself around smart, like-minded entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, my friend, let's talk about the quote of the week.
Okay, the quote of the week this week, and I love this. This is a bit of a thinker, Topher, but this is from George Bernard Shaw. And he said, the single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place.
That's one of my favorite quotes about communication ever. It's so accurate, so true.
Yeah, so, and the first time I heard it, Topher, I had to sit back and reflect on what does that mean? But, you know, yeah, just... Think about it. The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. And it's a never ending game, Topher.
Speaking of which, that's why we have this podcast, is because it is a never ending game. So every time you tune in, you're going to get one of these six strategies. This was a great one about marketing. Stay tuned, because next week we're actually going to be talking about, let me pull it up here, business finance, your favorite topic. So tune in next week for business finance.
Right. So with that said, Topher, I know, say it's an infinite game, a never-ending game, but it does have to end now, because I know you've got a place to be. So I will say, everybody, if you want a better business, you need to be a better business owner. See you next time.
Well said.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Three things you need to do now. Number one, make sure you subscribe to this podcast so you do not miss an episode. Also, get on over to Amazon to get a copy of my latest book, Turnover is Vanity, Profit is Sanity, 9.5 Steps to Improving Your Profits and Cash Flow. Also, join our Facebook group, the Turnover is Vanity, Profit is Sanity community, to connect with other business owners.